From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in nursing homes across New York State. Since March of last year, nursing homes have been hit with not only tragic levels of COVID infection and death, but fear and isolation. Across the country, nursing homes are the source of the largest number of COVID deaths. In New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo has said for many months that New York State has been better than the national average in this regard. But now, according to State Attorney General Tish James, turns out that's not true. The AG says New York State undercounted nursing home deaths for months by as much as 50%. For advocates of nursing home reform, none of this is surprising. They've been calling for change long before the pandemic began, and they plan on working for change after the pandemic subsides. And with COVID continuing to spread, they have thoughts on what's happening inside nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Let me welcome my guest for this hour. Mary Dell Wypick is co-chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice. Mary Dell, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Pia Chetty-Briones, who's an educator and member of the advocacy group New York Families for Visitation Now, whose 97-year-old mother lives in a nursing home. Pia, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Alan Pfeffer is with us, a retired attorney working on issues related to nursing home visitation as well, and also has a personal connection we'll be talking about. Alan, thanks for making the time.
Thank you.
I want to start by listening to some of what Governor Andrew Cuomo had to say about all of this last Friday. This is the governor responding to the report from Attorney General Tish James and talking about where deaths occurred, how they were categorized by New York State, what we learned about them, and whether it's fair for the Attorney General to say that New York State has been undercounting nursing home deaths.
Look, whether a person died in a hospital or died in a nursing home, it's the people died. People died. I was in a hospital. I got transferred to a nursing home, and my father died. My father was in a nursing home, got transferred to a hospital, and my father died. People died. By the way, the same people are dying today. 96% of the people who die are older people with comorbidities, which happens to be the population that lives in nursing homes. It's continuing today, even with all the testing that we're doing. If you look at New York State, we have a lower percentage of deaths in nursing homes than other states. A third of all deaths in this nation are from nursing homes. New York State, we're only about 28% only, but we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? 33, 28 died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died. And I dealt with the loss of my father. The pain is so incredible and inexplicable, and why it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And I understand maybe the instinct to blame or to find some relief for the pain that you're feeling. But it is a tragedy, and it's a tragedy that continues today.
That's Governor Andrew Cuomo. And so just some notes from a journalistic perspective before I toss it to the guests for their initial opening remarks on that. So a number of listeners of this program have asked, you know, how come journalists aren't doing more on nursing homes, or why aren't you covering this more? And I will say a couple of things about that. First of all, you know, we've had some conversations on this program, and there have been a number of journalists who've written plenty of stories and covered this, Karen DeWitt among them. But I will also say that the public doesn't always see what journalists are doing privately to try to get information, whether it's filing freedom of information requests, trying to get clarity on numbers. And the fact is, New York State, for months, led by the governor, has said that, no, the nursing home numbers is what the number is what it is, and here's the number. It took the attorney general to come out and say, to dig through, to get some answers, and then to sort of compare that to what the state's reported to say, no, the state has underreported this. Now, from my perspective, if I get a chance to talk to Governor Cuomo about this, one of the things that stands out to me in the remarks we just heard is I find there to be some dissonance in saying it doesn't matter where someone died. What matters is they died. And then say New York State's numbers in nursing homes are lower than the national average, and then ignore the fact that they are not, according to your own attorney general. You can't say you don't care about the numbers and then say, but our numbers are better, and then ignore what the AG says. I know it's the reporting of this can be complicated, and there's a lot that still needs to be investigated, but I think there are some important outstanding questions here. And I think the reason it really does matter where people pass away is that will help guide your policy to make sure that future mistakes aren't made. So there's a lot I think that we still probably need answers for. But listeners, as you know, I'm often wrong. And if you think that we're missing some things here, feel free to call the program or email me, connections@wxxi.org. Mary Del Wypick, when you listen to what the governor said there, what stands out to you? What do you think?
Well, I don't. The numbers, they do matter. People need to know how many people died in a nurse. That were residents in nursing homes died from COVID, and they need to know where those the nursing homes, which nursing homes those were. Now, today I read in the DNC that the Empire Center's request for information is being honored. A judge said that New York State needs to release the numbers of deaths in nursing homes for each nursing home. So how many people died and how many people died in what nursing home, not just whether they died in the hospital or in the nursing home. Those numbers matter because we need to know going forward what was working in those nursing homes and what wasn't working so we can fix it.
Pia, what comes to mind for you when hearing the governor respond to the AG's report there?
Well, first of all, I'm glad the AG put out a report so we could get a response on this. But I think the governor is trying to play, you know, two sides here. He's saying, yes, we're, you know, we care about this. The numbers do matter, I think, and behind every number is a person. And, you know, he's saying that New York is the best, but while I think New York has done some really great things and has been a top leader in many areas of the COVID response, I think in nursing homes, they've really let the side down. So I'm not super happy with that answer.
Alan, what do you think?
I think the statements that you made, Mr. Dawson, are correct, particularly about the difference between saying we're the best but not having accurate numbers. However, that we have to drill down. We're interested in causation. Months ago, back when I could do limited visitation at the nursing home, so that's like the beginning of the fall, the executive director of the nursing home where my daughter is explained to me in a casual conversation that there was great confusion over the reporting definitions. And this was raised in the attorney general's report. If the patient went from the nursing home to the hospital and died in the hospital, is it the hospital's responsibility to report it, or is it the nursing home? And this was never clarified, or at least at that time, it was not when most of the deaths were occurring. This was not clarified for the nursing homes. And if both entities report it, then you end up with a double count. So why was the definition so confusing? We have to look at that. You know, the New York Times had a report a few days ago about high-level people leaving the Department of Health. We need to look at that. We need to look at the loss of expertise in our State Department of Health. You know, historical information is gone when people walk out the door. So it's a very complicated situation as to how such a poor definition of reporting requirements got written. However, we do see this in other reporting examples. You take the state DOH webpage that says all cases, and in fact, it's not all cases because college students are not included in the State Department of Health webpage report to the public on cases. However, prisoners are reported on their page. So there's a lot of bureaucratic sort of issues.
We're going to spend the bulk of this hour talking to our three guests about how they see not only the current situation with nursing homes and long-term care facilities, but also the changes that could be made. And some of this goes back well before the pandemic. This is not generally just a pandemic issue for with Advocates for Change, and we'll be discussing that. I'll read an email first from John in Canandaigua. He says, John says, Evan, Governor Cuomo saying that every death is a tragedy is obviously, that's obviously true, but it's a way of deflecting from the more important fact that he and his administration chose to mislead and deceive the public, all the while receiving praise and admiration from many across the political spectrum for his masterful handling of the pandemic. It's human nature to get things wrong on occasion, but to set up metrics that arbitrarily result in the appearance that your own actions are successful, while the truth shows otherwise, is the bigger issue. Again, that's John in Canandaigua. Thank you, John. I'd like Pia and Alan to just tell us a little bit more about their own personal connections to this. And Pia, I know for you, it's your mother. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my mom is 97, and she's been living in a nursing home here in Rochester for about 6 or 7 years now. I used to visit her very often and be involved in her care. And, March 13th, 2020, the nursing home shut down. Wasn't able to get in there at all for until about October, when my mother's health had deteriorated enough that the nursing home decided she needed compassionate care visitation status, which meant I actually could get in to sit with her in a room for 2 hours once a week. And that happened about 3-4 times until the infection rate, the infections happened in the nursing home again. And once there's an infection, you're locked out for 14 days. So I haven't seen her physically in person since right before Thanksgiving. And she's lost about 19 pounds in almost 11 months. Her dementia has really just deteriorated. Her physical, emotional health, depression, anxiety has really gone through the roof. And she actually didn't get COVID until about 3 weeks ago. So, and now she's also a COVID survivor. So
Wow. Why
can't we get in? I don't understand what the DOH is doing with ignoring federal guidelines, which since September have said compassionate care visitors are allowed into nursing homes and facilities regardless of COVID status. Other states have figured out safe ways to do this. We think we have the science to back up to show there's a safe way to do this.
Yeah, and Pia, first of all, I'm just relieved to hear that your 97-year-old mother is a COVID survivor. I'm very glad
so
to hear
far,
that.
Yes.
But let me also just briefly ask you before I ask Alan for his story on this. You know, I know you listened the other day when Harry Bronson was on this program, member of the New York State Assembly, talking about visitation. And we heard from a number of listeners that day who said that they feel that New York State, the governor, et cetera, are sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. In other words, when you've got a problem like this, a pandemic that is much more deadly and dangerous for the older population, there is an understandable urge to kind of shut down just about as much traffic as you can going in and out of nursing homes. And then there's going to inevitably lead to isolation. You talk about dementia getting worse. You talk about, you know, mental health getting worse. But the argument sounds like this, Pia. Well, if they would have relaxed those standards and more people would have gotten sick, people would have called the governor a murderer. People would have said the state was negligent. What do you say to that?
I totally understand that. I think the problem comes that, yes, if there was another COVID death in a nursing home, people would get upset. If there's a death not directly attributed to COVID, people don't seem to care. In our advocacy group, which is about 25 or so families around the state, we've already lost 6 loved ones in nursing homes. Now, all 6 of those have died from, not from COVID. They've died probably from isolation and failure to thrive. So while there are risks, there are safe ways that you can enter a nursing home. You can shut down a nursing home, but the staffing is still coming in, right? There are still people who have to come in, so you can't completely shut it down. And, you know, you do have to weigh the risk factors, absolutely. But I also know that when you're over the age of 90, your risk of dying from natural causes is about 15%. So let's figure out a safe way that people aren't suffering in isolation and may be able to survive this.
Yeah. Alan, tell me about a little bit more about your story.
Well, my daughter has Huntington's disease. Huntington's disease is a genetic defect. There is no treatment. There is no cure. There are no survivors. So my daughter is slowly dying. She was diagnosed 10 years ago, just a few weeks before her 30th birthday. She lived with me for 5 years, and then the state created a specialized Centers of Excellence for Neurodegenerative Disease program at three existing nursing homes for Huntington's disease and ALS. And next month will be 5 years that she has been residing in this program in a nursing home in Dutchess County. One of the neurologists has reported to me that the change in activities and the lack of visitation from me has affected her well-being. Routine and constant routine is very important for people with neurodegenerative diseases. So just, you know, the loss of in-house activities, there's no communal activities, there's no visitors. That's a big change. My daughter tested positive in December. Fortunately, she had no symptoms, but she had to be removed from her room into the quarantine section of the nursing home for the safety of other people. That is very disruptive to her. So my position is the governor has the power to end the lockout as soon as the place has been vaccinated, and all the residents, or more than 75% of the residents at her nursing home, have been vaccinated. And I believe it is time to end the lockout now, and the governor has the power to do that. I also want to see a permanent bill enacted that will prevent a lockout from occurring in the future. And while I applaud Assemblyman Bronson's bill, I note that it has many, many shortcomings. We talked about trying to balance the risks and the needs. And to me, what we have here is a continuum, a balance between the state's police powers to protect the well-being of the community, the public, and individual liberty rights. So to me, when the risk imposed by a visitor is no greater than the risk that's imposed by the staff who they have daily encounter with, then visitation has to be open with some safeguards, and the individual has to have a predominant right to that visitation as a constitutional liberty interest. And you know, one of the problems I have with the bill is that this overall guidance and this continuum is not set forth to give the health department legislative guidance on how to balance these different points of view. And I think every resident should have an unlimited right to name this personal care or essential caregiver without the need for some medical appointment. So those are some major points that I want to stress.
When's the last time you hugged your daughter?
Oh, a long time ago. It's almost a year. The last time I hugged her was my last visit there on March 10th, 2020. I used to go twice a week. I would take her outside. I would wash her face. I would brush her teeth. I would cut her food. I would interact with the staff. You know, when we talk about this problem that we've been talking about, the visitors augment the staff. The visitors also are an overwatch. We, you know, we're the canary in the coal mine. If there's a problem, we bring it to the nursing home's attention. We get things changed before they become critical issues. So by having us not permitted into the nursing home, our watchdog function is not being fulfilled.
That's an interesting point.
Right.
Sounds like Pia, do you want to just briefly add to that before I turn to Mary Dell? Go ahead, Pia.
Yeah, I would just like to say I agree with Alan's points. He made some really good ones. And it's true that families are an essential part to the care of the residents. We do notice things before a staff person. We also are very helpful to the staff because, COVID-19 just sort of brought to light many of the problems in nursing homes. So we're there to help, and the staff appreciate our help, and they are missing our help, you know. So it's important that the governor doesn't seem to understand that, I think.
Well, let's talk about staffing levels. And Mary Dell Wypick is co-chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice. And one of the things Mary Dell and I talked a little bit about yesterday before this program was that staffing levels is not just a question of pandemic time staffing levels and a just right now issue. So, Mary Dell, when we look at this issue, how far back does it go, and how do you see the issue impacting the care for patients and the quality of care?
Well, I think the problem goes back many, many years. My mom was in a nursing home here in Rochester for 13 years, and it was it's an not-for-profit. It's pretty average, and I thought she had fairly good care. But I was up there, like Alan and Pia said, I was up there all the time, and I provided the assistance to the staff and helped to her. Now, that nursing home was able to have, during 2019, I would go up and take a look at the bulletin board to see how many staff were on, because I knew what the levels should be. And I could say that during 2019, the levels on her floor were pretty good, close to what is recommended by CMS. But we have about 619 nursing homes in New York State. Of those nursing homes, less than 10% meet the federal guidelines of 1 staff to 6 residents. That's 1 to 6. People don't understand. Most people don't know, even family members. They think that staffing levels are regulated. They're not. There's no regulation in New York State except to have 1 RN, 1 registered nurse, 8 hours a day in the nursing home, and to have 1 RN or licensed practical nurse as a charge nurse for each unit all day long. But otherwise, the staffing levels are just noted as they should have sufficient nursing staff. Well, what does that mean? That's very nebulous, and each nursing home can use that term to their own, to what they want. So when less than 1 out of 10 have staffing levels at the rate at what CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, recommends, that's pretty bad. Now, that was going into COVID. Now, since COVID, we've heard of nursing homes that have staffing levels of 1 to 20, 1 to 30. And how can people get adequate care with those kinds of numbers? And not just the care, taking time to use the precautions needed to not spread the disease. So we want to see that change.
Yeah, Mary Dell, I mean, it strikes me that, you know, yes, there's going to be regulation. I mean, there should be oversight. But when you have nursing homes, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong or ignorant on this point, but when you have nursing homes in sort of a for-profit model and you have language on staffing requirements that is a little bit nebulous, as you say, that does allow nursing homes to decide on their own what meets a sufficient level of care, I think you're probably going to see a wide range of how nursing homes do it. And I think there would be some people who listen to this conversation and who say, well, you know, if you don't like the way they do it, find another nursing home. It's a free market. You can choose that. Generally, how do you respond to that?
Well, you can look, but for example, if someone is needing their care paid for through Medicaid, your choices are limited because the nursing home may only take so many percentage of residents with Medicaid because the rate is much lower than if it was private pay. So there are some nursing homes that don't even accept Medicaid.
residents. So, you know, it's just that's the problem. You can't just pick up and move. You can try to move someone from nursing home to nursing home, but it's very difficult, very difficult. And it's almost impossible now because of COVID. I've known people that have tried to do that, and they found it next to impossible.
What's the right model when you look at how you want this to either be regulated or if there, I know there's a Safe Staffing for Quality Care Act, you know, take me through what the solutions look like, Mary Dell.
Well, the best scenario is to regulate through legislation the nursing home level or staffing levels. The bill as written now says 2.8 hours a day for a CNA, which is a nursing assistant, certified nursing assistant, 1.3 hours a day for an LPN or RN, that would be the charge, and 0.75 hours per day for an RN. Well, so those numbers would come down to around 1 to 5, 1 to 6 ratios.
Okay.
Or in other words, 4.1 direct care hours per day. I would say, like I said before, the nursing home my mom was in, they were able to handle those numbers for the most part. I mean, not every day. And some people had to get moved from floor to floor, but they tried. And they didn't have unlimited funds. They had a lot of people on Medicaid. So they were able to do it. And we just don't buy the premise of the of all the nursing homes and their organizations saying they could never, ever do it because it costs way too much and we can't find the staff. Yeah, they could if the money was used the right way.
Okay.
So that's what the bill says.
Okay. Is there momentum or movement you see toward getting that done?
Well, that bill has been kicking around the legislature for years. And a couple of years ago, the governor wanted the DOH to do a study on the feasibility. So that's how far it got. Now, it's been reintroduced, and it has moved from the Health Committee into the Codes Committee. So there is some movement. And I think that COVID being as horrible as it's been has shined a light on the problems of nursing homes. So we're hoping that now we'll finally get some momentum. But the industry is going to block this bill every step of the way.
The industry being nursing homes.
Nursing homes and hospitals. Now, the bill is for not just safe staffing in nursing homes. It's for hospitals, which is a whole other problem. But so that, yeah, when I say industry, I mean both.
Sure. And do you think the New York State Attorney General's report from January 28th supports the idea that staffing levels are insufficient?
Yes, very much so. I can just say that they looked at, now I said something about the CMS ratings. The CMS ratings for nursing homes is called the 5-star ratings, with 1 being well below average and 5 being well above average. And nursing homes are rated on their staffing levels, among other things. And what the report found was that facilities with 1 to 2-star staffing ratings had half of the number of deaths overall.
Mm-hmm.
So staffing numbers count.
Yeah, and before I turn to the other guests for their thoughts on staffing levels and where we go next, just let me briefly ask you, Mary Dell, are there nursing homes that stand out to you that are really doing this right?
Well, I like I said before, I think there are some that are definitely doing right. We don't know for sure which homes those are because the numbers were not reported for each nursing home in terms of number of deaths and number of cases of COVID. So there's no way to compare one to the other. Now, in the report, in the Attorney General's report, she compared for-profit homes. And so we can look at that.
So Let me ask Pia and Alan for their thoughts just on staffing. And Pia, would you support what Mary Dell is proposing there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a problem with staffing shortages. You know, I think, as she points out, there's probably a really close connection between low-star nursing homes, poorly staffed nursing homes that have had infection problems and problems in the past and have been cited, and COVID deaths. You know, I mean, COVID just kind of helped maybe bring to the forefront a lot of problems that were already there. So you do need adequate staffing. I mean, these are, you know, someone's in a nursing home not by choice usually. You know, they're there because they need 24-hour care.
Right.
So you need to be able to care for them adequately, and that's a combination of correct staffing and family members who are very much part of the care process. It's not, you know, when you say visitation, it's not like we're just going in to have coffee, you know, with someone. Excuse me. We're going to help out. We're going to care for our loved ones.
Okay. Alan Pfeffer, what do you think?
In 2011, 2012, I started my advocacy to get this specialized Huntington's disease program created. I formed a statewide team, and we had a member from Rochester on that team because you know there's a lot of people with Huntington's disease in your area. We have a center of excellence for Huntington's disease at Strong Memorial Hospital. And we went to all three of the associations that represent nursing homes, and they all basically told us the same thing. You get the state to give us more money for reimbursement for Medicaid Huntington's disease patients, and then we'll get you the beds. And so this was an advocacy to create a specialized program with higher staffing ratios and more reimbursement. Money is the key. And we need to increase basic salaries to get people to want to be aides, to get them to want to be nurses in facilities. The compensation level needs to be raised. We need to prioritize this as a society. We are not prioritizing our healthcare delivery system. Perhaps we should take all the profit-making entities out and make it illegal. Mm-hmm. You know, in New York State, an Article 28 hospital, excuse me, I'm not sure about Article 28, but a hospital in New York State is not allowed to be owned by a corporation that has stock that sells on the stock market. Did you know that? So basically, you cannot have a profit-making hospital in New York State. HCA, the largest hospital provider in New York State, which is a publicly traded corporation, has no hospitals in New York State. Okay? So maybe we need that kind of a model for nursing homes, where everybody is not for profit. I think that would improve, you know, the situation.
Talking to Alan Pfeffer, mm-hmm. a retired attorney working on issues related to nursing home visitation, Pia Chetty Briones is an educator and a member of the advocacy group New York Families for Visitation Now. Mary Dell Wypick is co-chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice. After our only break of the hour, we'll welcome some of your phone calls and emails on the subject of nursing homes, what has happened in this state, what changes could be made, and where we go next, right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how much do you understand about endometriosis and fibroids? For millions of people, for millions of women, that understanding comes when there's diagnosis, and it's often accompanied by a lot of pain and discomfort. But there are some developments that might change that, and we're going to talk about understanding endometriosis and fibroids next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Adam in Rochester, first on the phone. Go ahead, Adam.
Hi. You know, very good, really, conversation. I am from a medical professional background, and I have one question. Can the Center for Medicare and Medicaid institute some of these sort of changes, regulations? And I'll take my question of the, you know, if legislation becomes more difficult, I'll take my question off the line. Thank you.
Okay, Adam, thank you. Can Medicare and Medicaid regulate this better? Let me start with Mary Dell Weipick. What do you think?
Well, they make recommendations for and guidelines, and it's up to the states to regulate the nursing homes. There is also, we can look to our federal representatives, Congress, to regulate as well. There, I don't remember the exact number of the bill, but there was a bill being that was introduced last year in Congress that would regulate staffing numbers.
Okay. Pia, what do you think?
Well, this is the part as a non-professional person doesn't quite understand. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services puts out federal guidelines. For example, in September, they put out a guideline about allowing compassionate care visitors in. But the state, and we actually, our group had a phone call with the Department of Health in October, thanks to Assemblymember Bronson, who arranged it. And we complained about this, and the DOH told us on the phone that, oh, yes, we will follow the guidelines. We are following the federal guidelines. We will come out with clear guidelines for nursing homes, which is one of the problems. They don't really give clear guidelines. And we've heard nothing since October. So I don't quite understand, you know, if you have a federal guideline, I would hope it would have some strength in a state. But it seems to just, you know, kind of sit there without being acted upon by the state. So I don't really understand that myself.
Okay. Alan Pfeffer.
Mm-hmm. The agency has considerable powers to regulate because of the federal money. So for the Medicaid patients, which is, you know, a federally shared program, and Medicare, they could do regulations. They have extensive regulations now.
All right, 844-295-TALK, listeners, if you want to add to this, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Kathy writes to the program and says, staffing levels are insufficient, but most aides around here make in the $11 to $12 an hour range for doing a very hard job. The whole system needs to change, and Medicaid reimbursements need to increase. Again, that's from Kathy. Mary Dell Weipick, what do you think?
Well, I want to go back to the we were talking about the for-profit nursing homes. So out of the 619 nursing homes in New York State, 60% are owned by for-profit corporations or entities. So that's a considerable number. And what the AG report found was that of those, 280 for-profit nursing homes account, as I said before, accounted for half the number of nursing home deaths. So for-profit, that means they're what they do is take a profit, make a profit from the monies that are paid to them to care for residents. What we need to do in New York State is take a look at that system and fix it so that we put in place a certain percentage of income is used for patient care, not for profits, not to buy yachts, make portfolios bigger. It needs to be used for the care of residents. And that's where the legislature can come in and make that happen.
Does that tie, as Kathy says, to what the staff is making per hour?
Sure, because what has been found over time is, for example, if in some counties, a for-profit entity has come in and bought a nursing home that was previously run by the county. So they buy the nursing home, and the first thing they do is cut staff and cut services and cut wages. And I mean, this has been documented by the unions who were in those nursing homes prior to the sale. So when you cut people's income, why do they want to stay? I mean, and also if you, okay, now you were seeing, you had six residents to take care of, we cut the staff and now you have 10, that makes it even harder to care for residents.
Okay, Pia, what do you think about staff pay?
Well, I think staff are paid pretty poorly. You know, I'm my mother's pretty fortunate that she's in a very good nursing home. I'm very pleased with how her care has been. And through COVID, they've been really trying hard to keep families informed and involved and keep the members, as they call them, the members, engaged. But I know that there are CNAs there, nursing assistants, who, they work more than one job. And they are just not compensated the way they should be for a job that is so essential to our humanity. And to have, I might add, to have something as a for-profit entity involved in healthcare seems really, really the wrong way to do business.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say where Pia's mom is, Elder Justice puts out a chart that puts on all the CMS ratings for the local nursing homes. And that nursing home has a 5-star rating. But there are nursing homes, and many of them in this area, that have a 1- and 2-star rating. Now, they're getting the same amount of Medicaid money, but they're using it differently.
Mm-hmm.
That's one point. And you're right about the how much the direct care staff makes. We really need to make sure that the nursing home is giving them a good wage so that they are able to stay and not have to work more than one job. Some people like to work more than one job. I know a lot of aides have they go somewhere else and they have a independent position, like going into someone's home. But when you have to work 8 hours at one job and then go and work at another job for another 8 hours or 4 hours, that's just really bad for people in general. And it's bad for the residents because the staff are tired, they're worn out, they get sick. And it's been even worse during COVID because if staff are going from one place to another, there's even more chance of contracting the disease.
Yeah, and to the point that Mary Dell makes, I'll turn to Alan next here for this before I jump back to the phones. Just more pay for staff means less burnout, less turnover, more consistency of care. And frankly, for all of us who either end up needing such care or have family members who do, boy, I'll speak for myself. I want people paid well who are taking care of them for all of those reasons and more.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that, there are some incredibly loving, compassionate caregivers.
Of course.
Yeah.
And they need to be compensated, definitely.
Absolutely. No, that's more advocacy for them,
right.
Not denigration of them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alan, how do you see it?
Well, let me say first from the Huntington's perspective, continuity and routine is very critical to mental well-being. And when you have turnover of staff, that's a break in the routine. The number of people that you encounter every day is critical to your health. The lower the number, the same people is really important for your care. The last time I looked, the national statistic for turnover in nursing homes was 34%. My personal observation, I have seen housekeeping staff aspire to be aides and go and get trained for that and change positions. I have seen aides aspire to be nurses and do the same thing. And then they leave. So, people are always leaving for a little bit more money or maybe a better shift or a few more hours. And what was said about two jobs, I've seen a lot of that. So the whole model needs to be rethought through. I sat in on a conference at a National Huntington's Disease Convention where they talked about other models for Huntington's patients other than nursing homes. So our nursing home system is based on a post-hospital model, but in Europe, I know they have other models. Now, that may not be uniformly true for all types of causes, but we shouldn't treat every illness the same. In nursing homes, we have nursing homes that specialize in dementia. We have nursing homes that specialize in rehabilitation. So these things need to be thought about also when we're thinking about the overall picture and how we might redesign a system. There might be other models for certain populations that work better.
All right, let me try to squeeze in as many calls as I can here. Brian in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Brian.
I was just curious. I know it, not everybody could do this, but it seems to me that a lot of hand-wringing about leaving their parents in a nursing home. Why not bring them home?
I hear that a lot. I see that a lot, and I hear Pia laughing. My mom lived with me for 7 years, and she at post-stroke, and it required a lot of care. And she was able. My mother was in. She could walk. She could talk. She could converse. She could feed herself with one hand, but she needed care for every other. Well, most other. Daily living tasks. When you think about people who live in nursing homes, they are older. I mean, it's not like you see on television, this is a nursing home. No, the people that live in nursing homes are older. Most often they can't walk. They either need help to use the toilet or they cannot do it. They need to be changed. Often they can't feed themselves. They need a lot of care. And people, their family members, for one reason or another, may not be able to do that. Maybe they're older themselves, maybe a spouse. I mean, if your mother is 97, how old do you think that family member is? You know, the other extreme, when my mom came, I had 3 young children and a job. So for someone to go back home is very difficult. The homes are not set up. You don't have the ability, you don't have the money to provide the care. And so nursing home would maybe the only option.
Let me get Linda in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see better training for staff on how to interact with residents, maybe, mm-hmm. and also maybe ways for families to give feedback to the nursing homes. There used to be more family councils. They've gotten away from that. And I just think there could be a lot more done to make it a better place.
Pia, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think families, you know, one of the things about even though you have your parent or your loved one, your partner in a nursing home, I mean, families do need to be part of the discussion, part of the mm-hmm. care plan. And, you know, our nursing home has been pretty open to a family kind of council. We regularly meet with them and have suggestions that we do see some of those, you know, get put in. So it's kind of like this holistic view of the entire health and aging process. You know, everyone has to be involved. Everyone has to be able to say yes, no, try this, try that. And it will require probably, you know, as Alan said, a whole new system, a whole new way of doing things.
Alan, you want to add to that?
Well, I before COVID, I used to attend quarterly plan of care meetings at the nursing home. I was very, very much involved. I was asked to consent to her vaccination. My daughter has been vaccinated, both doses. So, you know, I'm heavily involved with the administrative part, to lack a better term, you know, besides doing the direct care that I would do.
Well, in our last 2 minutes here, let me just ask all three of our guests in 30 seconds, what do you want people thinking about? Mary Dell, when you think about the changes that you want to see made, for listeners who are really engaged on these issues or are impacted themselves or just hearing this and feel that you made some compelling points, what can get done next? What do you want people to do?
Well, I would like people to write or call their legislatures in support of the Safe Staffing for Quality Care Act. I want them to talk to their legislators about increasing the oversight and regulation of the nursing homes in New York State and looking at the model of for-profit nursing homes and how that's going to affect the care.
Okay. Pia, 30 seconds. What do you want to see happen next?
Vaccines are here. We're all getting vaccinated. If the nursing home residents and staff and some of the visitors are vaccinated, we should be getting in and call and write your elected officials, definitely.
Alan Pfeffer.
Same thing. Call and write the elected officials. write the governor, tell him once that people have been vaccinated, end the lockout.
And I'll close with just a question for Mary Dell Wypick, who's been in touch with us for months on these issues. You know, we're going to have a conversation coming up, I hope, not only with we're reaching out to the governor's staff, but also with nursing homes, the heads of nursing homes. And we're going to have that conversation with Advocates for Change as well. And we hope to do it in a balanced way. 30 seconds, Mary Dell. What do you expect us to hear from nursing home leaders on these issues?
Well, I hope that the leaders are pro-visitation because, as we said, that can only help. But I want them to really take a look and see that staffing matters, the staffing levels matter, and support that.
Well, I want to thank our guests for making the time for the program this hour. Mary Dell Wypick is co-chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice. Mary Dell, thank you. I know we'll be in touch again soon.
Thanks.
Pia Chetty Briones is an educator and member of the advocacy group New York Families for Visitation Now. Pia, I'm glad your mother is hanging in there, and thank you for bringing some of these issues to us. We appreciate the conversation with you.
Thank you, Evan. This is a great show. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Alan Pfeffer, retired attorney working on issues related to nursing home visitation as well. Good luck to you and your family, Alan. Thanks for making the time for the program.
Thank you. Keep me in mind for the future.
You got it. And we've got more connections coming up in just a moment.